Welcome to another episode of Engineering Influence, a podcast by the American Council of Engineering Companies. Today, we're having an interview with someone who I wanted to talk to in Chicago, but just could not find the time, unfortunately. Karis Fraser-Baker is a technical artist for virtual reality at Walter P. Moore. And when we talk about innovative technologies, when we talk about breakthrough things that are kind of really driving the industry, virtual reality and augmented reality are two things that really always come into the conversation. And really happy to have an opportunity to talk to someone who works on this stuff on a daily basis and to get a better idea of how it is impacting and affecting the engineering industry, what it's used for, and just really get a better sense of how how it works. So, Karis, thank you very much for being on the show.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about your background, because like I was saying, you know, before we really went on air, it was just the idea that we talk to a lot of, world. It's advocacy or it's engineering. But your background's a little bit different. Tell us about kind of how you came to get to Walter P. Moore.
So I came to Walter P. Moore approximately 2 years ago, maybe a year and a half. I was scouted for my work in indie games, specifically Astro Pro Games. I was creating user interfaces and artwork inside of our framework that we use on a daily basis, and there was an opening at Walter P. Moore. They noticed my work, and I applied, went through a number of rigorous tests to get here, and I made the cut, so I'm very happy to be a part of the team.
So you're applying your background in graphic arts and programming to the engineering industry. So that's
exactly right.
And that's something to keep in mind for those, listening who are interested in engineering but may not directly have an engineering degree, but, or looking to see what else, how they might be able to get involved in the industry. Really programming and being able to translate these ideas and these designs into a three-dimensional space, that's a useful thing, and graphic arts is a good way of getting into that field.
That's exactly right. I really love what I do. I started out with I wanted to make Toy Story, just like anybody else would when they grew up watching Toy Story. but my favorite part was like the end of it, where they would show you the behind the scenes of how they created those things, how the technology came to be, and all they showed all the artwork and all the technology and everything. So that's really where my interest was sparked. I ended up going to school for computer animation. I found programming through my school. I ended up changing my degree program into more computer focused, like video game art. And I got my degree in video game art. And then as I moved my education through my career, I started learning more about game design, game development, which ended up led me to, litigation imaging and video game development. And, eventually that brought me here. So I've been out of my degree for about 6 years now. And I think that throughout my career path, you'll see like a pretty consistent theme of me seeking larger and more exciting projects through what I already know and love, which is creating experiences. So where I am today is really where I think I've always wanted to be, which is working on large structures, experiences, rides, skyscrapers in virtual reality for engineers that I respect so much.
Yeah, and that's really a good point. Creating experiences. How is VR changing the way engineering works? How do you apply that with the engineers and the projects that you work on at Walter P. Moore? Give us a sense of, how it's used and how these experiences or just worlds are translated.
So I can answer that question simply with a story about our expo, our booth at ACEC just last week. We were next to a booth, and we were showing off our tool, and our tool is basically an automated pipeline that brings your project into reality or into virtual reality with one simple button press. And we were showing off over and over, and the booth next to us, one of the exhibitors, pops his head over and says, "So I hear what you do. I've been building my own home in Revit for 3 years, and I'm interested to see it in VR because we're closing on it at the end of the week. We're starting construction next week, and I really want to experience that. So can I give you my Revit file? And if what you say is true, you can have a virtual reality build for me in less than an hour. And I said, yeah, let's do it. And so we took that Revit file, we pressed a button inside of Revit, and less than an hour, we had a result for him. I provided him the headset. He came over to our booth. He jumped into the project and he saw and walked through his own home that he had been designing for 3 years for the first time.
That's amazing.
It was amazing. And I remember like how emphatic and excited he was. He would walk through and he said, this is my daughter's bedroom. This is my wife's bathroom that I designed. This is my back window. This is my balcony. And he's so excited about that. And so he stays inside of it for like an hour, and he's going through it. He's doing exactly what we designed it for. He's marking up things. He's communicating. He's talking with people. He's taking pictures for his family to see. He's deciding things and making choices. He's measuring things to make sure that they are the way that he wanted them to be. And I remember he takes off the headset and he goes, where were you guys 3 months ago? Where were you 6 months ago? If I had this tool, then I would have changed so many things.
I can only imagine when someone sees a design that they've been working on, whether in case of this guy, his house, or just a design that's going into a structure or something, you know, just being able to translate that and walk into a world where you see it in front of you, it changes your perception on exactly
it really does.
How it functions.
That's exactly right. And what I like to tell people is that when you're able to wrap your head around it like that, you know, you're seeing things in one-to-one scale, exactly the way they would. And you would think that, you know, just seeing it on a computer screen, like, oh, I get it. You know, I can see it. But time and time again, I'll have those people who say, oh, no, I don't need it. I was like, okay, well, just try it. Here it is. You know, and they'll put it on. They say, wow, I have no idea. I didn't know this is what it was like. You really have to try it to understand how unique the experience is, because there's no other word for it than experience. You know, we've been playing around with words like experiential, like the you can't really get a word that describes that, that moment of putting the headset on and completely occluding the physical world and experiencing the digital world like that. Once you see it, you look up and you're able to see the entire skyscraper in front of you. You understand the scale, you understand the breadth and the width and the height of everything and how you are next to the thing that doesn't exist yet. You know, that's just a really exciting place to be in regard to our technology. And it's an exciting place to be in regard to where our technology is going.
And the resolution's gotten a lot better. I mean, it's fairly photoreal compared to how it used to be. I think everybody remembers back to the old, you know, the 90s movies, you know, Lawnmower Man, where everything looked like, well, early computer graphics. But now it's, you know, with the development of game engines and you know, better graphics cards, I imagine that it's a fairly photoreal representation of the environment, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's, you know, in fact, the Vive Pro that we were able to show off at ACEC last week has such a great resolution that you can't really see any pixels anymore. So it all depends on that point about what we actually provide for you to see. Mm-hmm. So we can dress it up and make it really pretty, and we can add some cool lighting effects, we can add awesome shadows and make it look really nice, and then we can also just get it done. So for a lot of our engineers, you know, the pretty is nice, but they just want to see the result. So we can do it faster without making it super nice. But even the baseline that we provide to our engineers is pretty nice. You know, we focus on graphical fidelity, and we can make it look really beautiful for a client. And that's what's really great about our technology where we are. We can pretty it up for a client, show it off, or we can just get it done and we can have a short iteration time for the engineer if they're constantly creating something for them to check. So that can be, low amount of processing for just the rapid iteration, or it can be like a week-long sprint of, you know, high fidelity, and then we can create something really exciting. It's awesome. It's a lot of flexibility there too.
Yeah, I can imagine, and that's you know, for the engineer who's working on it on a day-to-day basis, who just wants to see it and test and you know, get a better sense of it in that environment, I can imagine, you know, doing a quick build and just getting it done. On the client side, though, how has it, I mean, what are your impressions on how it's kind of changed the way that the firm kind of presents things to clients with the VR experience and I guess the client reaction? I'm interested in that kind of like, you know, because it's just a different way to show off the work and to, you know, to show how things are actually going to be once the structure or whatever the design is completed.
So I've never been in a scenario where there's been a negative reaction to one of our projects mm-hmm. in regard to showing it off in virtual reality. And considering I've been there for a number of them, I think that's a good representation of yeah. most of our experiences. It's always like a home run, at least from my perspective, because, you know, I have a lot of faith in our product in regard to our virtual reality builds. And of course the work that Walter P. Moore does is always, you know, top notch. So being able to be there before ground's even broken is a very powerful experience. And I'm sure for a client who's used to seeing things on paper and used to seeing like maybe really beautiful renders or whatever, on 2D, you know, seeing those things, not just in 3D, but once you're actually inside of it, it's always a powerful moment. And we've actually been able to utilize virtual reality for not only winning projects, but also updating clients on the project's process, mm-hmm. and also for showing it off at the end of a project. We actually did a project where we provided the company a virtual reality setup for them to show at their office to show those who come in what it will look like when it's done. So after the project had been completed, they had a final VR build that they could show off to passersby and just be like, oh, look what we're building. And that was something that they showed off at the groundbreaking of that particular building.
That's an interesting thing.
And kept at their office. Yeah.
Yeah. So that also shows the
whole process. Yeah.
Yeah. And that shows the portability. I mean, you don't need a whole setup, right, anymore to do this. So you can have a fairly portable system.
Yeah, we're actually playing with the Vive Cosmos today, which is a inside-out tracking device, and we're going to see how that plays out. You've got your outside-in, which uses your lighthouses. You got those little like things on tripods that look down at you while you're inside of VR, and then you got your inside-out, and that's going to be your Oculus Quest and mm-hmm. your Vive Cosmos that are going to not need any external, lighthouses in order to track where you are. So it is becoming much more portable as the technology advances. And I think that's an exciting place for us to be as far as like R&D is concerned, because we get to try out all this new technology and see how it fits within our AEC industry.
Yeah. Now that's of course VR, which is, you know, total immersion into a virtual environment. And the other technology, which is, depending on the industry, it's in varying stages of development, it's augmented reality, AR, which of course just inserts a digital element into the existing environment. You work on both. Compare to VR, how is AR developing and being used?
So last fall in particular, we spent a few months doing R&D on an augmented reality product, and everyone that knows what augmented reality is wants one particular application. They want to be able to go out onto the construction site, put on their goggles, look at their iPad, whatever you have at the moment, and they want to be able to compare the as-built with the design intent. And that's what they want, right? There's a few things that are problematic with that. You can get it done. It is possible. However, in regard to making it more approachable for the common user, there's a few issues. One of those issues is the degree of accuracy that we can currently get with our currently available SLAM algorithms that are available. So our SLAM, that's our simultaneous localization and mapping. And that is basically the computer's vision. How can it connect the digital content with the physical content? And with all of the, you know, you can name every single one of the currently available headsets or otherwise AR trackers. You can get to, I think the smallest that we can get to is a centimeter accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
But you know as well as I do that a centimeter is a lot.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
it comes to AEC. So AR is great, and it's good for making estimations right now, and you can create experiences that will allow you to make general assessments like, oh, that beam's in the completely wrong spot, or mm-hmm. that one is completely incorrect. But in regard to what we need it to be right now, it's just not there.
Yeah.
That's not saying that it won't. That's not me saying that we can't get it there. I'm saying at the moment, it's just not quite there. There is another issue, which is the tracking, or specifically with augmented reality goggles. They have a difficulty working outside,
uh-huh.
which is where most construction happens, you know?
Exactly.
So until we can kind of solve that issue, there's that. Some of the augmented reality demos that you'll see, some of them are indoors and looking outside onto a city, and you'll see like a skyscraper that's placed into the environment. Or you might see a demo where they're underneath an awning, and then they'll look out at the construction site. That you can't necessarily guarantee that you'll always have an awning with a lot of cover to provide that kind of experience. So it's a very controlled, if you have a very controlled environment, you can create a good enough experience. But even then, there's the centimeter accuracy problem. And even past that, there is an issue with pinning and drift, which is mm-hmm. the idea of connecting the digital content with the physical content.
Yeah.
And then looking away and coming back to it and noticing that it's drifted quite a bit. You know, it gets back to that centimeter accuracy bit, even if it is centimeter accurate. And there's that little bit of discrepancy. You will have even more discrepancy if you move your head.
Yeah.
So we're not quite where we want to be. But that doesn't mean we won't be, and we won't be there soon. Just at the moment, we're on the road. We're on
yeah.
the road to something awesome that we'll all be able to use. And, you know, it doesn't matter if it's going to be the Magic Leap. It doesn't matter if it's going to be the HoloLens. Nobody's really providing that experience that we need right now, but a lot of people are working on it.
Yeah, and
somebody's going to get there.
You beat me to it, because I was going to mention the two big, it seems, companies or investments in developing the AR tech. Apple, I think, is working on something that they're not telling mm-hmm. anybody about. But the big thing is
yeah.
Magic Leap and HoloLens from Microsoft. And Magic Leap, of course, was a secret for a long time, but promised a revolution in AR. HoloLens is probably the more not vaporware-ish, I guess, example of things, because they actually have it out in demonstrated environments. But those issues that you brought up, the drift, and just the fact that you can't use it completely in a fully open area that has a lot of light leak and has a lot of, atmospheric issues are two impediments. But I guess over time, processing speed and refined algorithms will help reduce those variances. And
yeah.
one day, like you said, relatively soon, we should have a system that is fairly yeah. good. If not for like a direct one-to-one conversion, which you have everything is measured accurate, to something that can at least, serve as a good approximation of a digital, model right
yeah.
there in a physical environment.
Even past all that stuff, there's still file size.
Mm-hmm.
We work with projects that are, 18, 20, 30, 60 gigabytes. We're going to have to figure out ways to provide very small packages at a time in order to see those very large projects inside of an AR situation. So there's a lot of hurdles, and we'll get through them all. How about that?
Exactly. Now, that's another interesting point, because I was talking to someone else who was a CIO with Mead and Hunt, Andy Knopf.
Mm-hmm.
And he mentioned the fact that one of the challenges that the IT departments are having is now that we're moving into more of a digital space and we have these VR files, we have these, digital twins, that the question of storage and the question of, all the compliance issues that come in, archiving and keeping these files and having them readily accessible is a challenge in its own right. Because like you said, these are big files and they're just going to get bigger over time. And, you know, one of the challenges that firms are having is, you know, how do we appropriately structure an IT department to be able to handle a lot more of this?
That's exactly right.
So this is really interesting. So, I mean, it's just the VR and the AR space is really something that's going to be, I think it will, there's always debate about, okay, is VR going to have a future in engineering? Everybody sees what's happening and what could be, but there are always people who are like, well, you know, it could be a passing fad. From what you've seen and your experience and the work that you've done at Walter P. Moore, do you think that it's here to stay?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I can guarantee, and it's not just my opinion here. It's a collective opinion of many of my colleagues, former naysayers, and I would the VR AR Association. You could consider AR and VR an exponential technology, similar to the cell phone.
Yeah.
I think that we're going to continue to see growth in these areas, and that it will become ubiquitous with some of the things that we use today, and I believe it already has begun. I think that there were other people that weren't me that said it best in regard to how virtual reality has already become widely accepted and has already started to begin its ascension into an exponential technology. You know, it's been around since the early 90s, but at this moment, it's really taking off, especially with the Oculus Quest and especially with the Vive Cosmos coming out now. Allowing like the Oculus Go and allowing people to, as consumers, enjoy these things in a pretty seamless way. Just like throw it on, watch it on the airplane, you know, watch a movie in bed, do whatever you want to do. Those kinds of things allow you to involve virtual reality in your daily life. And then when you get to work and you throw it on, it's just like breathing at that point.
Yeah.
There are a lot of industries that are pushing these technologies forward. You know, it's becoming more prevalent in the military simulation industry. You know, those are the more research based industry. Sorry, those are the industries that are doing most of the research for us, and then it, you know, trickles into our consumer specific technology. So we're able to enjoy the research and research and development. So we have really awesome consumer level virtual reality right now, and augmented reality, as you've seen with you know, the years past, the explosion of Pokemon Go, and now we have augmented reality stuff that we enjoy on a daily basis, like with the IKEA app and things like that, that we just come to know and love. We're going to continue to see that, and I don't see it going away anytime soon, especially with the adoption of the Alexa glasses. I think we're going to see more fashion-forward augmented reality glasses coming next year specifically. And I think that fashion-forward augmented reality is going to start a wave of acceptance of augmented reality wearables. And then once we have acceptance of augmented reality wearables, I think that AR and VR will become synonymous, and this is opinion-based now.
Yeah.
I think that we're going to have sort of like a sleep mask or like an opacity setting that we put over our AR goggles that we turn into VR goggles. And so then we have one single wearable that we're able to switch on and off between AR and VR at our own will. I think that's where we're going, and I don't think we're ever going to go back.
Yeah, I agree. I personally agree. I think you're going to get to a point where there's an expectation by the client to say, okay, that's a great design. Show it to me in a 3D virtual space. And
yep, I absolutely agree with that.
Yeah, so that's the new world. And again, that's one of the things about the value of engineering and the, you know, members of our industry is the fact that they apply, you know, it's innovation in a different way. It's taking technologies that are emerging and using them in the best way to solve a problem or apply that potential way of looking at things to a project or a client request. And this is a perfect example. It's an engineering firm. You know, Karis, you're someone with a computer programming and a graphic arts background, and bringing them together and creating the ability to show a client in a 3D space, you know, what otherwise would be a paper or a CAD drawing. You know, it shows how innovative the industry can be.
Absolutely. And, we're going to see further disruption. You know, right now we're in the middle of a disruption. Unreal has done awesome things for VR, AR so far, and we're going to see Unity Reflect available next year, or by the end of the year. Unity Reflect is a brand new development platform that people like myself and my coworker will be able to utilize, but also will be available out of box for those who can't program to be able to use to show their clients or their collaborators or their vendors stakeholders their projects in real time in VR. So out of the box, it's going to work with the HTC Vive. It's going to work with iPad. It's going to work with PC. And the idea behind this brand new, just announced technology, this development platform, is you'll be able to move something in real time, and the person who's watching it in VR will be able to see that change and be able to have a conversation about those changes. So unparalleled collaboration, unparalleled coordination and communication tool. We're just going to see even more, even better real-time experiences for the AEC industry coming.
Absolutely. Well, it's great technology, and it's a fantastic and interesting future. So I really appreciate your insights, Karis. Thank you very much for being on the show, and I hope that we see you out at our next convention in April in the exhibit space.
Well, thanks for having me. It was a pleasure being here.
Great. Thanks again. Karis Fraser-Baker, she is a technical artist for virtual reality with Walter P. Moore, and keep a lookout because stuff is only going to get better. Thank you very much, and see you on the next episode.